This week's national interest brings a note of warning for ourselves and our country. And before I get there, let me also tell you what makes it possible. Because it's easy to say free and fearless journalism. But what is free and fearless? Free and fearless is also shouting a slogan or even throwing an abuse at somebody. That is not journalism. The journalism needs hard work, intellect, figuring out facts, going and finding out facts, which our reporters are doing, for people like me, researching, finding stuff out. We can't just write from memory. All of that, building a newsroom, building a team, which ideates, which argues, often disagrees, fights with each other in a good way. There is nothing like a good fight. All of that needs money to run. That money is coming from you essentially. So thank you very much. We've been promising you some subscriber benefits. Some have already started. Last couple of weeks, you've seen Your Turn. That's a feature in which only our subscribers write. In fact, we have now abolished the comments feature on our website. Only our subscribers write comments and we publish them with their pictures, description. I share many of them. We also started the other feature this time, which is Reporters Direct, which means that we will give you one reporter who's traveling in the field these days, maybe once a week, but maybe hopefully when this crisis, COVID crisis ends, the second wave ends, maybe once every other week, because we'll have reporters traveling across the country all the time. One, to tell you that the money you give us as subscribers is well spent, and second, also to make you interact with our reporters directly in the field and you know how they are doing, what they are doing. You will also be pleasantly surprised to find out that most of them are very young people, and frankly, almost all of them are young women. Brave, smart, sharp, intelligent young women. So this week, many of you had a conversation with Jyoti Yadav, who's been doing stellar work out of Bihar. And also, you've now started joining us. That's the third benefit that we started this week, as guests on my off-the-cuff conversations with our distinguished guests. So we had earlier this week Vijay Gokhale, our former ambassador to China and our former foreign secretary in the week. In fact, I am recording this on 4th of June, which is the anniversary of Tiananmen Square massacre. That is when Vijay was a young diplomat in Beijing, and I had gone to cover that situation, that story for India Today magazine. So you had him, and this Saturday evening, in fact, just around time you'll be watching this, we are also breaking an off-the-cuff interview with Nicholas Wade. He is that famous, brave, veteran science journalist who has yanked open the can of worms of the Wuhan virus, or the virus that came out of the Wuhan virology lab. So listen to him, and once again remember that more than 100 of our viewers who are our subscribers, they had the benefit, also the opportunity to listening to this live as I recorded that. And you can do that also going ahead if you subscribe. So if you haven't subscribed already, please subscribe. We need your money. Good journalism need your money. Otherwise, good journalism will not run, or we'll go around looking for grants and help. But anybody who gives you a grant, most people, not all, but most people who give you a grant have an idea. There is nobody who has a better idea of what journalism could be than a paying subscriber. So be a paid subscriber. And if you're a subscriber already, then top up, take a regular annual or monthly subscription. It's a big help for us and good journalism. Having said that, what is the warning about this week? This warning is about, you know, we are getting very excited that, negatively so, that somebody has named this B.1.617 monster the India variant. Now, we are complaining everywhere, and generally the world is being kind. Officially, people don't use it. A lot of the foreign media uses it. Some papers are notorious for using provocative language, like in Britain you find the Daily Mail now uses it almost as a rule, and every day I see a headline from them using the Indian variant. But we are getting upset about it. I use this example to reach another conclusion, which is that if we are a country so sensitive about our national pride that we get hassled that one viral variant is named after our country, what will happen when something much, much, much worse can happen? And that can happen. I also explained to you what that thing is and why that can happen. So first of all, we begin by asking, what's in a name? Shakespeare's question. What's in a name? That which we call COVID-19 by any other name would sicken, hospitalize or kill us all the same. Makes no difference to the wretched virus. So why are we getting our knickers in a twist if someone across the world describes our latest and most notorious variant B.1.617 as Indian? Now don't worry, knickers in a twist is a perfectly usable printable idiom. There is nothing obscene about it and there is nothing politically loaded about it any which way. This is like choti si baat hai. This is nothing to be upset about. Why are you getting your knickers in a twist? Why are you getting angry about something that is not of such consequence? But the fact is that these are not normal times when you could be thick-skinned, when everybody could be thick-skinned. Some might be. The Chinese have set a new norm by attacking anybody who dares to name the virus after China or Wuhan. Donald Trump saw an opportunity and insisted on using the name for sure. But most others have shut up and not done it. Most of all, WHO. WHO in any case does as the Chinese ordered them to do. We in India are only taking a touchy nationalism cue from our more prickly neighbor, that is China. Now, WHO meanwhile is trying some conflict resolution. That so many countries are getting upset and this virus travels. It travel karta hai without visa, passport, goes from country to country. So it goes to Brazil, one variant, UK, one variant, South Africa, one variant, India, one variant. Now from India, it's gone to UK. So this variant ka sub-variant, Delta ho gaya, right? So this virus will keep on traveling through countries. And if people keep naming them after countries, some countries will get upset. So WHO, having failed to read the threat in China in early 2020 and having failed to warn the world in time, WHO is again proving itself to be no more than a Chinese stooge. But at the same time, it is using Greek alphabets to name the variants. Alpha, beta, like that. It is difficult to see if this will assuage hurt feelings in India or elsewhere. Now, we know Louisiana Senator John Neely Kennedy. He is a senator of the Republican Party, formerly a Democrat. So this is, he's not that very common species in American politics where a leader from one party joins the other or sort of defects to the other. He's also known for his colorful language, his cutting wit, and he does make a lot of headlines out of his Senate congressional hearings. And he also can be a bit politically incorrect, or more than a bit politically incorrect. So he was questioning Dr. Anthony Fauci in the congressional hearings. And he said that, look, if you lifted Xi Jinping, held him upside down and shook him hard, don't you think the WHO will fall out of his pocket? This is in the US congressional hearing. And Fauci laughed. What he said sounds very rude, but that tells us the reputation in which today WHO finds itself. So chances are in the weeks to come, WHO will have to address more serious concerns about its own performance and reputation rather than merrily shove lollipops and pacifiers, isko sudar bolte hain India mein, lollipops and pacifiers in the mouths of crybaby nationalists like ours, like India's. If you are another thin-skinned Indian nationalist, as most of us are, even I am, particularly when India is playing any competitive sport, I am the most thin-skinned nationalist. We have tougher questions staring at us. If we are thin-skinned nationalists, we have tougher questions staring at us. All I am trying to do is hold up the mirror to all of us. It's the rear view mirror, in fact. It's not a mirror like this. It's a mirror like this. It's the rear view mirror, in fact. And I want to repeat to you that awful old warning. Objects in the mirror are closer than you think. So not this mirror, but this mirror. That means something or somebody is catching up with you. It's coming closer than you think. So let me explain how. Now, anybody who's interacted with Steve Cohen, Professor Steve Cohen, who was a renowned South Asianist and a strategic scholar on the subcontinent, and he has a legion of students, chelas, people who've learned from them, people who've interacted with them. He always said that if you listen to me, don't use two expressions. Don't say superpower and don't say the third world, because these are very wide, broad brush labels. Once you use these expressions, then you have to close your mind. Then you have no patience for thinking, questioning, nuance, or complexities. So he said, you don't use it. Now, everybody in the world was not his student or not his follower, not his fan. So in the world, these two terms actually acquired great currency. And in fact, many, many, many countries then worked very hard to give up, to get over the third world tag or get out of the third world, our country included. We in India believe that in the past 30 years, we have broken out of the third world status, and for good reason. Between 1990 and 2020, we pulled more than 30 crore people out of extreme poverty. It's a kind of a world record after China. We brought about a great change in the whole world when it comes to poverty counts. Our economy became the second fastest growing economy, second fastest growing large economy anywhere in the world for many, many, many years in succession. We became the back office of the world. We built humongous foreign exchange reserves, $600 billion now. And remember, to understand the perspective, this whole Indian economic reform began because we had no foreign exchange reserves. In 1991, in the summer of 1991, India had to fly its gold outside because it had no foreign exchange reserves to make its payments overseas to avoid a default. That country now has $600 billion worth of foreign exchange reserves. It's a wonderful thing. People of Indian origin now run the sexiest global corporations, hold public positions from Vice President of America to the Finance and Home Ministers of the United Kingdom, Prime Minister of Portugal, many cabinet positions in Canada, including for a long time Minister of Defense. That India's stature has risen globally is a reality, and evidence of it comes in pointers more substantive than UN declaring an International Day of Yoga. Nice thing, but I don't think it does that much for India. It's again a little lollipop. Strategically, our growing weight is underlined by our membership of the Quad, special invitee status at G7. These are a lot weightier. These are really weightier achievements. That's the reason I say International Day of the Yoga is not such a big deal as a key member of the Quad, one of the four, also invitee to G7. Prime Minister Narendra Modi has been sought after and feted by his global peers across the world. That's happened because India's status has risen. At which point we might be inclined to call out a warning. And warning, you remember the old warning, Houston, we have a problem. So the warning we hold out now is Raisina Hill, we have a problem. And what is it? So besides superpowers in the third world, another geography got defined with political, economic, and social implications. That is sub-Saharan Africa. That is the African nations below the Saharan desert. It became the globally accepted description of the worst of everything, as in, oh, that country is a basket case. That country's indicators are worse than sub-Saharan Africa, right? Sometimes it's been said about some of India's key social indicators as well. But then we always have an array of great global success stories, including world-class corporations to talk about. We are also the birthplace of the greatest religions of the world, including Hinduism, Buddhism, Sikhism, Jainism. We have the scriptures, history, moral authority. How can you compare us with sub-Saharan Africa if we falter on a few indicators here and there? Anyway, you know how these rating agencies work and where they are coming from. This must be Western bias. That's the way we look at it when we become defensive about these descriptions. But look at some realities. So I got my epiphany earlier this week as a little social media kerfuffle broke out over Kenya's quote-unquote aid to India in times of the pandemic. It was a modest offering of 12 tons of coffee, tea and groundnut. And frankly, with the offering, see that beautiful letter written by the Kenyan High Commissioner, who said, I mean, who made it so clear that this is not because Kenya thought India was short of coffee or tea or groundnut. He said, he wrote in the letter that, look, we greatly admire and appreciate the effort that your medical personnel, your doctors, nurses, technicians, hospital workers have put in fighting this wave of the pandemic. So this is just a little gesture of appreciation and gratitude from us. We would also like to offer them our tea and coffee to sip. So this was a touching letter, but it generated two different reactions. One reaction was the nationalist reaction or the ultra-nationalist reaction. Arre, tumhari majal kya hai? Apni aukaat samjhiye. You little sub-Saharan African country, you are offering India aid and that to peanuts. Now, peanuts also reminds me of the famous peanuts description for aid, to bring you back an old story. When Soviet Union first invaded Afghanistan and America reached out to Pakistan for help, Zia was in charge in Pakistan, Jimmy Carter was there in America. Jimmy Carter offered $500 million as aid to Pakistan, which Ziaul Haq immediately dismissed as peanuts. Now, those of you who might remember the history of Jimmy Carter would also remember that he was a Georgian peanut farmer. He was a peanut farmer, and that's why this little aid of $500 million was called, dismissed contemptuously as peanuts by Ziaul Haq. Of course, the Americans were not offended. They just upped it several times over. And that started the process of Pakistan getting enormous amounts of aid over two decades after that. But let me come back to the point now. On the other side, which was more vocal on the other hand, the sentiment was, thank you Modi ji, hashtag thank you Modi ji. Now you've reduced India to a situation where even chota African countries are giving us aid. But if you looked at both sets of sentiments, the basic thing underpinning both the sentiments were the same, that are an African country, and that too a sub-Saharan African country, is giving India aid. That was the common sentiment, which also sent me on a socio-economic exploration of that part of the world, rated lower than or perhaps the worst part of the third world. So it was, oh, you are the third world, and then you are sub-Saharan Africa. So the worst part of the third world, until figures hit me in the face, real shockers, as I prime time anchors would like to say. This led me to an episode of my daily YouTube show, Cut the Clutter, which many of you watch, on these comparisons. You can check it out. I'm sharing a link with you. Contrary to our Bukananga stereotype of the African continent, at least 20 African countries are richer than India on a per capita GDP basis today. Most of these are in sub-Saharan landmass. No, the defense of, oh, don't compare us with nations with tiny, tiny populations, that doesn't work. These 20 countries, sub-African countries, most of them sub-Saharan, whose per capita GDP is higher than India's, together their population adds up to 68 crores. So that is not a small number. In fact, if you look at all of Africa, the population is about 128 crores. Its GDP, this year's IMF estimates are about $2.6-2.7 trillion. India is $3 trillion, again on the same IMF estimate, and you know India has a few more people than 128 crores. So we have to be a little bit humble about this and look within. And when we look within, we can see some trouble coming at us. Now, if you want to go a little bit deeper into the data and again check out IMF projections for per capita GDP for 109 or for all 195 nations for this year 2021, India has slipped a bit to 145, obviously because we had a bad year. But Ghana, Congo, Ivory Coast, Morocco are above us. Other richer African countries, Botswana at 84, India's 145, Gabon at 80. And then there is, of course, South Africa, Seychelles, Mauritius. Those are much richer than us. And there are many others. Namibia. If Bihar was a nation, on the other hand, so look, flip the picture. If Bihar was a nation, it would likely rank at 184 out of 195. And it will have more population, more people then all the countries from 185 to 195. Similarly, if Uttar Pradesh was a nation, it would rank about 172 on this list, and it will still have a population that will be more than the population of all the countries below that level of income. So don't say that any comparison that doesn't work for us is a comparison with richer countries with smaller populations. We are doing quite badly. Parts of India are doing quite badly in many areas. If I take you back to Bihar, at this point it will be just above Niger, Eritrea, Afghanistan, Sierra Leone, Somalia and a couple of others. Most of these are war ravaged countries with unsettled military situation or with active insurgencies going on and complete instability. Similarly, if you look at UP will be competing at 172 with Mali, Tanzania and Togo will be above it. So this data tells you that in fact if you add everything, then together these two states, these two Indian states, who determine who rules India, UP and Bihar determine who rules India, might have more people in extreme poverty than all of sub-Saharan Africa put together. And on most social indicators too, not just income, but most social indicators too. It is a lot of poor and a lot of poorly governed people, and that is what should persuade us to introspect. So two conclusions arise from this. One, that along with dark continent or even worse than sub-Saharan Africa, these were two deeply racist and unfair constructs, and we owe an apology to Africa, not just to India. These were Western constructs and these were also racist that unfortunately the rest of the world bought into. And second, that with the adverse global focus turning on India, a part of our country runs the risk of attracting similar epithets. For example, now the pictures of bodies floating in our great rivers and strewn alongside them are threatening to become the abiding image of the shambles in the great Indian heartland. What if somebody were to start using the description, oh, this place's human indicators are even worse than in the Indo-Gangetic plains? Think about it before you get angry. Reflect. That sounds worse than B.1.617 being called the Indian variant, isn't it? Much worse. This is the picture in the rear view mirror that's closer than it seems. Our misgovernance, lousy identity politics, whether of caste or religion, I don't care, or fake socialism, corruption, self-congratulation, empty triumphalism, these are all catching up and threatening to ruin our self-image faster than we imagine. It's a brutal, unforgiving world out there. And if I may add in conclusion, wake up, smell the Kenyan coffee. And while we do that, remember to hit that subscribe button, make your payment, because it is your contribution that is keeping good journalism like the prints going. And that keeps our reporters floating across the country, bringing you the news from the ground.